The euro is effectively down 17% in a year to the dollar. The yen is down 18%. So why are so many upset when the Chinese currency is devalued about 3%? From New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Toward the end of a week when Chinese authorities let the currency devalue, a dollar buys more than 6.39 yuan this morning. That means a dollar is up 2.9% for the week, a jarring move that unsettled market participants for a while. When I called Marketplace regular Christopher Lowe, the chief economist at FTN Financial, I found him more serene than most. Hello, Chris.
Good morning, David.
So the devaluation freaked a lot of people out in markets around the world. To what extent are you discombobulated by this?
Well, first reaction was, oh, gee, the last time China devalued, it was 33% in one day. So everyone's blood pressure spiked a bit on the news. But then you look at what they actually did. They devalued their currency by 2% on the first day, 1.5% on the second day. It's been stable since then. The currency was up 10% when they started, for goodness sakes. It's not the same thing.
And I don't want to sound like a Wall Street insider here, Chris, but do you see a connection, possibly, with what China has done?
I think actually there probably is a connection, and that is back in May of 2013 when the Fed started their infamous taper and emerging market economies were hit pretty hard by that. They started to worry about what would happen when the Fed raises rates. Janet Yellen's response was, let me do what I need to do to get the U.S. on the right track, and you do what you need to do to insulate yourself from it. If you think about it, that's exactly what China did this week.
Chris Lowe at FTN Financial, thank you for this.
You're welcome.
John Kerry is in Cuba today to raise the American flag and reopen the U.S. embassy. It's the first visit from a U.S. Secretary of State since the 1940s. Cuba's looking forward to increased trade and other commerce, but its vintage infrastructure will need updating. Here's Marketplace's Nova Safo.
Cuba's infrastructure needs a lot of updating, says Eric Olson, who's with the Latin America program at the Wilson Center, a D.C. think tank.
There's not been much investment in things like building roads. Electrical grids are very arcane and weak.
The country also needs tens of thousands of new hotel rooms and internet connections and power plants.
Well, it would be easier to begin by naming the things that don't need to be improved.
That's Ted Henkin, co-author of the book Entrepreneurial Cuba.
The opening of the embassy is really only the beginning. The ball is now in the Cuban government's court. How quickly and how wide are they going to open up that door in terms of investment?
But the ball is also in Congress's court, says Eric Olson of the Wilson Center, because it has to rewrite laws to lift the trade embargo.
Limitations on financial transactions are still in place, and these become a major obstacle.
Another challenge for American companies, the foreign firms in Europe and Asia, which are also eager to get a slice of the Cuban pie. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
About a year ago, Marketplace's wealth and poverty team moved out of their home base in downtown L.A. and set up shop a couple miles away in a neighborhood called Highland Park. They found a place at the intersection of York Boulevard and Figueroa Street. The York and Fig Project explored change and what many call gentrification. Now that team's going back, and I wanted wealth and poverty reporter Chrissy Clark to tell us more. Hello, Chrissy.
Hey, David.
So give me a sketch. Highland Park in Los Angeles?
For the last few decades, it's been a working-class, majority Latino neighborhood. But then in the last few years, the Latino majority has been shrinking. Wealthier white young professionals have been moving in, along with more businesses that cater to them, fancy coffee shops and yoga places, that kind of stuff.
Now, I remember around the time that you first opened our bureau there, the neighborhood outpost, there were some protests going on about the changes, and somebody painted the word gentrifier on a bunch of the storefronts in the area, the new ones, including the place that you were working out of. Looking back at the project, Chrissy, what do you think? Did you have some kind of gentrifying effect?
Well, home and commercial real estate prices are still going up. Of course, there's really no way to know if the attention that we brought to the neighborhood had much to do with that. That certainly wasn't our intention. But recently, someone in the neighborhood showed me a flyer that a realtor had mailed them. And it said, if you're considering selling your home, use me. And one of the credentials that this guy listed in the flyer is the fact that he was mentioned in our radio series, which we were a little surprised by.
The Heisenberg uncertainty principle, the effect that you have on those you were studying.
Right, exactly. But then we had other real estate people who were profiled in the series that have gotten pushback. We talked to one real estate investor who's been buying up a number of commercial buildings in the neighborhood. Last year, he had explained on the air that his investment model depends on raising rents. Apparently, after that aired, someone left an angry note on his car telling him that they did not like what he was doing in the neighborhood.
All right. So what will you be looking at in this next round of stories and podcasts?
So we're going to hear where some of the more interesting folks that we met last year are now. We're also going to hear from folks who are exploring some interesting solutions to what they see as the downsides of such rapid neighborhood change.
This will be rolling out on our airwaves and at marketplace.org/YorkAndFig. Thanks for the preview. Marketplace's Chrissy Clark.
Thanks, David.
And the people who make Wheaties are teaming up with a craft brewery to make beer, wheat beer, of course, Wheaties Hefeweizen, with help from General Mills. The New York Times quotes the brewer saying, "We're not saying it's a breakfast beer, pause, but we're not saying it's not," unquote, available in Minneapolis, St. Paul only, near General Mills headquarters. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.